Life Architects. Adam Carroll here with the start of the new year solo cast. Welcome to 2021. You know, I stayed up until like 12:30, 12:45 on December 31st into January 1st of 2021. And I did it for a very specific reason. My grandfather used to tell the story of an in-law that he had. I think it was a brother-in-law. And this brother-in-law was not a nice man. He was a very mean man, apparently. And this particular gentleman passed away prematurely. And my grandfather said, I went to this guy's funeral just to make sure the SOB was dead. And that's kind of how I felt about 2020. And so when my wife and I and our kids and a couple friends that were over were ringing in the new year, I felt like the Kool-Aid man was going to come bust through the wall.
Oh, yeah.
But once it happened, then things went south. January 6th happened. I'm going to talk about that a little bit today. I'm also going to give you some prognostications for 2021. Essentially, the show today has three bits. The first bit is the State of the Union. I want to talk a little bit about my feelings around the insurrection at the Capitol building and what I have been trying to do to reconcile that in my brain as to why it happened, who was involved, all of that. Secondly, I'm going to talk about some money moves to make for 2021 and building a bigger life. And last but not least, I want to talk about the reset, because one of the things that a new year gives us is the ability to hit the reset button, if nothing else, mentally, for what the next year is going to become. You know, your past doesn't dictate your future, but most people are making decisions based on past memories, not on their future vision. I'll say it again. Most people make decisions based on their past memories, not their future vision. And so when we hit the reset button in 2021, it allows us to refocus on what we truly want life to be like. If you want to build a bigger life in 2021, this is how we do it. All right, so let's get started first and foremost by talking about what happened on January 6th. Now, I have to say that watching all of that unfold, and watching isn't even the right way to put it. It was coming through in text messages and in news alerts on my laptop. I was doing a two-day offsite with a client. We were doing some strategic planning for their year. It was the second day of a two-day offsite. And we were at the point where we were talking about quarterly rocks or goals, things that they were going to accomplish in the first quarter of 2021. And one of the gentlemen in the room said, there are people storming the Capitol right now. And that was the first text message that came in. All of us kind of obviously were a bit in shock, dug in a little bit for maybe 5 minutes going into a break and then finished the day, at which time I raced home, turned on TV, and was absorbed in it for the next several hours. And here's what I was left with. I'm watching these folks do what they did. And the question that kept coming to mind was, then what? Then what? So you've made it in the Capitol. And there was one particular interview with a young lady who had been maced walking into the Capitol building. And she's rubbing her eyes with an onion, which ostensibly limits the amount of agitation that mace does in your eyes, apparently. I didn't know this, but this is what I found out online. So she's rubbing an onion on her eyes. And she's saying, they maced me, sort of incredulously. Like, I can't believe they maced me. And the person interviewing her said, what is your name? Where are you from? She gives that up readily. And then he said, why were you trying to get into the Capitol? And she said, we're taking over the Capitol. It's a revolution, man. Now, here's what I'm left with. What then? What next? And it being just after the holiday season, one of our favorite movies is Christmas Vacation. And again, it struck me that this was like Cousin Eddie going and getting Clark's boss from his home and bringing him to the house in dog chains. What then? What is going to happen? I get that there were probably folks that were there to protest. And by protest, what I mean is they were there to sort of make their voice heard. They wanted to march on the Capitol. They wanted to be seen. They wanted to demonstrate, whatever that might mean. And I believe that there were probably people that were a little right of center, or maybe a few steps right of center, that were the ones that were protecting journalists and others from getting injured by the folks that were extreme right radicalists. So I believe that the folks that participated in this probably ranged in a wide spectrum of this center right all the way to the radical right. They call themselves patriots. And I hate that patriot, the idea of being a patriot, has a negative connotation to it now. Because I have a lot of friends in the armed forces, and I consider them patriots. My operations director is married to someone in the armed forces. He's a patriot. He's serving. He's serving his country. He is serving to make sure that we have elections that are free and open to the public, that people like me and you listening can go out and cast a vote for someone that we think is representative of our beliefs and that is capable of handling the office. And now the idea of a patriot is someone who storms the Capitol. To what end? It really makes no sense to me. And I was trying to dig into the mindset of people that are doing this. What is it that they're fighting for? What do they think they're gaining? And what occurred to me is the people that went, if you look at a cross-section of the people that were there, I think you would find that a number of them probably absorbed the same media content over and over and over again to the point that they're somewhat radicalized by that content. And my daughter is in an AP Gov class right now, and she loves her teacher, loves him. I mean, just thinks the world of this guy. He makes learning fun. He tells great stories. He is educating his students about government and what government means. And it feels to me like there is a missing element in society today that if you ask some of these folks, what is democracy? They couldn't tell you. And that troubles me because I think one of the things that this democracy in particular affords us is the ability to build a bigger life, to do what we want in a society like ours today. And unfortunately, I don't think what we've had over the last few years is seen as a democracy by others, especially those at the top. I can't tell you how excited I am for 2021 for a new presidential administration. And I'm not trying to take sides on this because, you know, Joe Biden's not my first choice as a leader, as an almost octogenarian who's going to lead our country. And I don't mean to be ageist, but I don't think there ought to be a lot of octogenarians running our country today. And the reason for that is I don't think octogenarians have a sense of what kids that are being born today are going to need in the future. And they're the ones that are making decisions for these kids. And that's problematic for me, but something I got to reconcile. So to all of the octogenarians and elderly septuagenarians that are in Congress right now, thank you for your service. And I humbly ask you, go be with your wife and your husbands and your children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren and probably great-great-grandchildren. You have done a great amount for the country. We appreciate you. And now please let someone else take over. So what is the state of our union? I don't know. I'm concerned that more of this will occur. And I'm waiting patiently for the adults to enter the room. I think there are some there. I just don't think their voices are being heard. I have to compliment Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney had a speech on the Senate floor that I was extremely impressed by. I think he's a guy who has a backbone and chutzpah, and he knows what it means to be an American. And man, I just hope that more people like Mitt Romney make their voice heard. By the way, those that truly believe they were doing patriotic work, they were being patriots, they were there fighting for what they believed to be was a stolen election. There's been no fraud found. Republicans and Democrats have said it was one of the cleanest elections that's ever happened. There have been 60 plus lawsuits, all turned over, all turned down. So I don't know. I'm just concerned. And I believe that there are brighter days ahead, but I also think we need visionaries to help get us there. And by the way, for those that did storm the Capitol, I have a little soundbite for you.
7 years of college down the drain.
I just feel like going in and doing what you did and not thinking through posting on social media, live streaming your actions. Come on. All right, now to lighter material. Let's talk about money moves for 2021. The reality is we're all going to move forward on this, and we got to live our lives. So let's talk about what's happening in 2021 on the money front. If we're going to build a bigger life, we obviously have to focus intently on our money. In fact, tenet 7 in the Build a Bigger Life manifesto, available on Amazon, is make money irrelevant. And in order to make money irrelevant, we have to do two things. We have to play great offense and we have to play great defense. Great offense means making more, but I like the idea of making more passively, not necessarily actively. Active income is money that you trade hours for, dollars for hours, hours for dollars. Passive income is money that comes in for either work that you've done, money that's been deployed in a certain way, or it could be things like intellectual property that you've written or created that generate money month in, month out. I believe that we have to play great offense in making more passively in 2021, and we have to play great defense in the sense that we are going to reduce our overall expenditures, our fixed expenditures, on a monthly basis. And by that, I mean we're going to blast away debt, particularly high interest, compound interest debts that are merely used to fund our lifestyle. And specifically, I'm talking about credit card debt, and I'm talking about car loans for the most part. I also want to lump in there student loans, because I think there's this mass contingency of people, 44 million Americans, who are still living under the burden of student loan debt. And some of them are parents who have parent plus loans on their kids. But our goal in 2021 is to blast that away. I'm going to do a number of shows this year specifically about blasting away debt, strategies for it, tips, tricks, techniques, and what you can do to really take advantage of some of the stuff that's out there and available to you for free to get your debt knocked out. So in the vein of playing great offense and playing great defense at the same time, there are a lot of things that are taking precedent in the news right now. And one of those, which I've been intently curious about, is Bitcoin. I bought Bitcoin on the advice of a financial advisor friend of mine by the name of Brian Dewhurst. And Brian and Philip are the two guys behind the Uncommon Wealth Partners. They have a great podcast called The Uncommon Life Project. And Brian and Philip have been advising me on a handful of things for the past several years. Brian, at one point, when asked about Bitcoin, he said, AC, how much did you spend on your very first computer? And thinking back, it was right after I graduated from high school and I'd gotten all that money in from graduation. You remember how awesome that was? Send out a graduation invite and you were guaranteed 10 or 20 bucks. I think I made $2,000-ish when I graduated from high school. And I spent $2,500 on a brand new desktop computer. The thing probably had about as much processing power as my very first iPhone or less. And I spent $2,500 on that. And he said, I want you to put $2,500 into Bitcoin. Just trust me on it. Just put it in there and assume that you've spent it on a computer and let it be. And I put around $2,000 in at the time. I transferred it out of an account, put it in Bitcoin. And as of 2 days ago, it was $7,000. Now, I did that over the summer. So it went from $2,000 to about $7,000 over the course of roughly 5 months, call it 5.5 months. Today, I went in and my $7,000 in Bitcoin was down to, as of the time of this recording, $5,622. It's lost $1,400 in the last 24 hours. Now, here's what I believe to be true. Because of the information that I've studied about Bitcoin, I think Bitcoin is not going anywhere. It will only go up. And here's why. There is a specific number of Bitcoin out there right now. I believe it's 19 million of them. And I can't recall if it's 19 million or 21 million, but there is a set amount of Bitcoin. There will never be more created, allegedly. It is not tied to currency. also interesting, and I'll talk about that here in a minute. It's not tied to currency. At first, it was meant to be just a cryptocurrency, meaning this was an exchange of value from one person to another. It could be tracked using blockchain. And there have been a number of wallets that have been created for Bitcoin. Some of those are services like Coinbase, okay? So you can buy and sell Bitcoin and transfer it to other people through Coinbase. And you can hold it as a store of value. And I think this is the interesting tidbit. At the outset of Bitcoin coming on the scene, it was really a way of paying someone. It was currency. But over time, what it's become is a store of value. It's almost become like digital gold. And when you see organizations, firms, equity funds, hedge funds, large insurance companies, Mass Mutual, one of the largest, most well-respected and oldest life insurance companies out there, bought $100 million in Bitcoin when it was around $20,000 a coin. So you can imagine they're probably licking their chops when it goes up to $35,000 or $40,000 a coin. But what they're really intending it to do is to exceed $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, $80,000, $100,000 a coin and go to where JP Morgan put it not too long ago and said, They believe that it will go up to $146,000 a coin. Now, if you believe, as Brian Dewhurst believes, that this is a good store and you're going to put some money in, my money move suggestion for you this year is buy a little bit of Bitcoin. If nothing else, what you're going to do is have a store of value, almost like buying gold bars, but it's transferable anywhere. You can use it anywhere. And my assumption is that at the end of this year, end of next year, it's going to be worth a whole lot more than what you have in there to begin with today. My cousin and I have been going back and forth on this, and he and I are both putting in money on a weekly basis. Some might call that dollar cost averaging. We are just deciding to buy Bitcoin and play the long game on this. I am not disturbed by the major movements or swings in Bitcoin because it's a fairly volatile asset anyway. Some people would challenge me on it being an asset class, but I truly believe it's like digital gold. So there you go. Go move some Bitcoin. Now, here's why. Over the last year or so, our government has printed about $9 trillion and pumped it into the economy. They've done it in, basically it's been disguised as stimulus payments. But make no mistake about it, this money that was printed was pumped out into the economy to juice the economy, to keep it going, and to make sure that ideally, and to be quite candid, that the stock market didn't go down. So if you can imagine where this money went, well, the money went into the market. It went into individual stocks and other assets. And in the midst of quarantine and COVID, and everybody dealing with the pandemic, job losses, and unemployment at sky-high levels, the stock market still was on a tear. And people were saying, I don't understand. Why is this not tied to what's going on in the economy? Well, first of all, the economy and the stock market are not one and the same. Number two, a very small swath of the U.S. public is involved in the stock market. And so those that are typically wealthy anyhow. They had discretionary income. They were pumping it into stocks and other securities because they were liquid at the time. And they were probably on sale. I remember right after things shut down in February and March, MGM stock went down to $7 a share. Why wouldn't you pour a ton of money into that? And when we look across the board at some of the big tech stocks that made a ton of money, well, it's no wonder that Amazon's made money. I think they received 43 cents on every dollar that's spent online. It's no wonder that Apple made money. Our school district, just as a small glimpse into their world, our small school district spent $11 million on Apple products to make sure that kids could dial in from home. And that's just one school district. Can you imagine how many billions of dollars were spent on Apple products across the country? So their stock went crazy and then they split it and it went back up again. So here's the dollar, the money move for 2021 and some of the assumptions you can probably make. There's a lot of people prognosticating about a decline in the stock market. But the reality is that there's been $9 trillion printed this year that is all going, has gone, or will go into the market. So what do you think the market's going to do? Until those big institutional players move money, it's going to keep going up. It just is. And I'm not saying there might not be a correction here or there. There probably will. And for that, what I recommend you do is put a stop loss on your stocks and your mutual funds. And if you don't know how to do that, check in with your advisor or get on E-Trade or Scottrade or whatever you use, TD Ameritrade, and research how to put a stop loss in. And you could put a trailing stop loss. So as the stock goes up, the stop loss keeps following it all the way up. But you might set it a 10% stop loss or a 15% stop loss. And what that means is if the stock drops that much in one day or over a period of time, it triggers your loss. You sell out of that stock and you retain your profit. Just make sure you're doing that a little bit. The stock market goes up and down. It will likely continue up for a time. There may be a correction here or there. And the one big holdout that I'm wondering about and I'm watching is Wells Fargo. And here's why. Wells Fargo's in my backyard. They're in West Des Moines, Iowa. They hold a massive amount of commercial real estate in our state, as well as around the country. And I read during the summer months that there were over 200,000 people that were working from home for Wells Fargo. 200,000. That is a ton of commercial space. At the same time, I talked to someone who is a actuary at Wells, and I asked him, what's going on at Wells Fargo? What is the future look like for Wells and the mortgages that they're holding right now? And he said, we have no way of knowing because nothing like this has ever happened before. You remember in the middle of the pandemic, there was some legislation passed that said that people could delay paying their mortgages for a period of time. Well, that time period is about to expire. And at last time I heard, there were 6 million people who had not made a mortgage payment since summer. 6 million mortgages that are potentially underwater. They could very well be in foreclosure or in pre-foreclosure when they come out. And I have a feeling that Wells Fargo is probably going to be very creative, let's say, with how they do the accounting on those loans. And by that, I mean, what they will probably do is say, hey, you owe the last 7 months or 8 months with interest. We're just going to tack that on the end of your mortgage. We're going to re-amortize the whole thing. And this is your new payment. Some of them may say, hey, you have a balloon payment due of 8 months worth of payments tomorrow or at the end of the month or in 60 days. And that will be a challenge for many, many people. But I think they're going to get creative. They're going to try and keep people in their homes, and they do not want a massive rash of foreclosures to hit the market. But if that happens, two things you can count on. Number one, real estate investors will be lined up licking their chops to get their hands on those deals. And number two, we will see a decline in the stock market overall, because I believe, as do economists, that the housing market, the housing economy, is a good predictor of what the overall economy does. And the reason that our interest rates are so low right now, 2.75, 3%, somewhere in there, for a 30-year fixed mortgage, is the Federal Reserve, the government, is attempting to juice the housing market to keep it moving forward. When I was in the mortgage industry, they said that for every home that was sold, it generates up to $40,000 in local revenue. That's people who are getting home inspections and appraisals, and they're buying new furniture and paint and supplies and remodeling and all that. Every home that's sold, $40,000 pumped into the economy. So you better believe that they're going to keep interest rates low to make sure that happens. The bottom line on money moves this year is this. I am bullish on what's going to happen. And at the same time, I also believe that you need to make sure that you are protected in the event of a downturn. I've mentioned this on other shows. The other thing I'll throw out there is I truly believe that everyone needs to have some amount of cash at home. And the reason for that is I think in the midst of all this chaos, the upending of our civility as a society, the uncertainty in the government, it is a perfect time for a strike by a terrorist that does not want to set foot on American soil. And what I'm hinting at is someone who probably already has a seat at the table that hits a certain number of keystrokes and it wipes out our debit and credit card system. And if that happens, it'll only happen for a while before they find what did it or who. And in that amount of time, all of the cash that's in our system will be sucked out of the system immediately, almost overnight. And that is when things could get ugly. So what I want you to do is I want you to have just a little bit of cash at home, preferably in $20 bills. I want you to put it in a safe. I want you to have it somewhere safe, just in the event that something happens. I'm no conspiracy theorist or fatalist on this. I just think it's good to be protected in 2021. The last thing I'll tell you, and I don't want to end this on a Debbie Downer moment, but I think our dollar is toast. The value of the dollar will go down now, month after month after month. It just has to. Well, you can't pump $9 trillion into the economy and expect our dollar to be worth more. So that is why I think a lot of these institutional investors are looking at Bitcoin. They're putting into something that is not swayed by governments. It is not swayed by denominations of currency, and it's independent. And I think we got to follow suit on that. So our dollar is toast. Don't keep a lot of money in savings in dollars. Instead, you want to do things like either deleveraging high interest debt or leveraging up on good debt, debt that creates income. Here's the money move I made at the end of 2020 and beginning of 2021. Those of you who have listened to my show for a long time know that I'm a big believer in blasting away your mortgage using the shredmethod.com. I paid my house off not once, but twice in the last 10 years. And I've spent the last 18 months or so with no mortgage payment, which was glorious. But then I realized that I could get it for 2.75%, it being the money out of my home. And I went back and I got about 40% loan to value on the home in a mortgage and immediately deployed it, levered it into an investment that will make somewhere between 12 and 14% per year. So it cost me 2.75. I leveraged it up, end up getting about 12 to 14% per year with a big kicker on the back end, an income stream in the middle of it. So I recommend that if you have equity in your house and you have not yet refinanced, that you look at what a refinance would A, save you in the monthly payment, and B, what you can pull out in cash that you could redeploy elsewhere. And some of the things specifically I want you to look at is if you have a car loan and it's got a $500 or $600 a month car payment, could you absorb some of that in a new cash out refinance that would save you, you know, $200 or $300 a month on your payment and then save you the $500 or $600 on your car payment? We could turn a refinance into a $900 positive cash flow transaction, more discretionary income every month that you can then deploy to make better returns. So if you think about getting a new mortgage, I want you to do it. Think about it, not to buy stuff, but to create income streams. Money is cheap right now. Money is cheap. But it's also worth less and less every single day because of what our government is doing to pump liquidity into the market to keep the market juiced. I truly believe that if you are over-levered in your cars, on your credit cards, the first thing we need to do is get that knocked out. That should be a priority this year. And by the end of the year, my hope for you is that you can begin to make money irrelevant. If you're wondering about how to do that, go check out theshredmethod.com. There's a free Kickstarter training there, or grab a copy of the book, The Build a Bigger Life Manifesto, which talks exactly how I and others have gone about doing that. All right. Now, to pivot slightly, it is time to do the reset.
I triple dog dare you.
We're going to triple dog dare you to reset your year in 2021. 2020 was kind of a shit show. And the show just kept getting shittier and showier. And then the first 6 days of January happened and everyone's hanging on, right? In all reality, the SOB didn't die. He actually came back to life in 2021. And though I believe the end is in sight here, but I believe the reset is the greatest part of a new year. So I took it upon myself, and always do, the first couple of days of the year is to get really clear, really intentional about what I want to have happen in this year. For 2021, for me, it is an increased focus on passive income, creating methods and means through which, if I create content, it generates revenue. And I'm really focused on how to do that, what to do, and building a schedule around doing that on a weekly basis. The second thing I did was I looked at what rituals do I have to do in order to get there? So my question to you, my fellow life architect, is what rituals do you have that might need to be re-examined, re-evaluated, reconstituted, reconstructed? I had to do some rituals, and I had to change them. Specifically, my morning ritual had to change. I get up at 5:30. I do a 30 to 40 minute workout. I sit in a sauna for 20 to 25 minutes and meditate. When I get out, I take a very quick shower. And then I sit down and I write out my plan for the day, specifically on what will be accomplished that day, what will make me feel successful. And then for the first 3 hours of the day, that's what I'm working on, that and that alone. I think the reset for most people this year is understanding that work from home is the norm. It will be the norm for many, many people. And we're going to get used to that. That is a reset button, not this idea of glorifying or being excited about getting back to normal. There is no normal. There is no as usual. And the reason for that is we're changing, when we change the narrative, and the narrative has changed over the last 12 months or 10 months at least. The narrative changed as a result of what we went through, which in some biological circles, they will call punctuated equilibrium. Punctuated equilibrium is the idea that when the environment changes, we are forced to adapt to it rapidly. And a great example in society is if you are a fish or an amphibian that's living in shallow freshwater, and you have legs as an amphibian, not a fish. All right, let's use an amphibian. And you have legs that allows you to crawl around in this shallow water. And all of a sudden the water gets really deep. There's a flood and you're no longer situated in the same little mud puddle that you'd always been, but instead you're floating around in this deeper water. You will adapt as an amphibian to grow the necessary appendages to allow yourself to swim. Maybe your feet, which were not webbed, are now webbed. Okay. I'm doing a terrible job of creating a metaphor here, but the reality is that we have all adapted, we've changed. And as a result of us changing and society changing and the work world changing, I believe that we are going to work from home a large percentage of the time, and we have to create rituals that allow us to succeed and thrive at work from home. We won't go back to life as usual. I think athletic events will be different. I think concerts will be different. I think we need to be prepared for it to be different. And that's the reset. Resetting your brain that the huge is no longer there. And if you can get used to whatever the new thing is, or getting used to just being extremely adaptable, then you'll thrive in 2021. I think that's what 2020 was for, ultimately. It was to help us learn that we could adapt to changing environments. And I think we've done a pretty dang good job at that. So my challenge to you, again, my fellow life architects, is this. Decide what you want in 2021 and make it happen. There is no one in greater control of your life than you. The decisions you make are yours. The emotions you feel are yours. And what you want in 2021 is as close as you decide it's going to be. I am super excited about what the future has in store for me, for you, for society at large. And I'm excited to see it all play out. And I appreciate you being on the ride with me. See you next time.